Imagine this scenario. In a possible future America, the evening's comforting murmur of family dinner is shattered by an ominous knock. The door swings open to reveal federal agents, and in a heartbeat, you're wrenched from the warmth of home, handcuffed, and cast into the belly of a black SUV. Trapped in a cell that echoes with the silent screams of the unjustly detained, time stretches into a grim eternity. With no word, no charge, you're treated as a criminal when your only crime was a stance taken in quiet conviction. The freedom of religion no longer exists, and you are left defenseless before a state that has weaponized ideology. When the court finally hears your case, it's not injustice that awaits, but a barrage of vitriol. You stand accused not for acts of harm, but for beliefs held, words spoken, faith practiced. With fervor bordering on zealotry, the prosecution brands you the arch-defector against the state-endorsed doctrine of so-called wokeism, a term used to describe the prevailing cultural ethos. Your refusal to embrace their ideology is spun into a tapestry of hate. And in the public eye, your trial becomes a spectacle, a frenzy fueled by the hunger of social media's ravenous crowds. Their verdict is swift, their judgment final. The judge, swayed by the uproar outside, seals your fate to appease the masses who cry for blood. And as you're led away, the cheers of the crowd are a chilling reminder of humanity's darkest inclinations. And in this twisted dance of justice perverted, who is the true enemy? Mere executors of a corrupted system? The jailers, blind to humanity of the imprisoned? The employer who betrayed trust for conformity? The prosecutors who twisted truth into weaponized lies? The judge who bowed to the will of the mob? Or is it the faceless crowd who revel in the downfall of the dissenting voice? So let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. We read, "But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them." This scripture, of course, is referring to Satan as being the God of this world. We can also reference John 12:31, John 14:30, and John 16:11 as Satan being referred to as the prince of this world, or in Ephesians 2 and verse 2 as the prince of the power of the air. So clearly this is Satan's world, and those living in it are his subjects. And I want to speak today on who our real enemy is. Considering the swift deterioration we're witnessing in society, it's clear there's a provocateur at work. It's unlikely for the world to fall into such widespread turmoil spontaneously. There's an influencing force, a spirit orchestrating from a realm we cannot see. As we approach the time of Christ's return, it's clear that Satan is intensifying his efforts. Reflect on the transformation we've seen in this world only since 2020. The mainstreaming of transgenderism and the inclusion of sexual content in early education. Millions of illegal immigrants are entering the U.S., Great Britain, and Europe at such a rate that the demographic landscape is shifting. This influx is poised to transform native ethnic majorities into minorities. The notion that a second civil war or a national divorce in the United States has moved from fringe discourse into mainstream conversation. Regardless of the actualization of such a conflict, the division is profoundly affecting the nation's unity. A house divided against itself cannot stand. And Christianity, as the world knows it, once the cornerstone of Western civilization for centuries, is now being linked to domestic terrorism. The term white Christian nationalist has become media shorthand for those perceived as a threat to what is termed democracy. The direction we are heading is clear, and at this pace, it will not be long before we begin to see heavy persecution of God's church, to the likes that have not been seen before, the Great Tribulation. Remember that possible future scenario I began this message with? Well, Jesus Christ had a similar situation. He was turned in by one of his own and treated like a criminal, unjustly judged and mercilessly executed at the behest of the crowd. Did he blame those involved? Did he curse them? Let's turn to Luke 23 and read this account, starting in verse 18. Luke 23, verse 18. And they cried out all at once, saying, "Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas." Skip down to verse 22. This is Pilate. And he said unto them the third time, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. So a carnal mind couldn't deal with this. For most folks, being caught in that kind of mess would spark some serious anger. It's just human nature to feel rage when you're hit with that level of injustice. Skip down to verse 34. What does Christ say? Then said Jesus, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Christ didn't blame a single person. Not only did he not blame them, he asked the Father to forgive them. Christ knows who the real enemy is. I think there's a really good parallel here in the December 5th, 1980 Pastor General's Report by Mr. Armstrong. He was writing about the loss of many of the top-ranked evangelists, and I want to highlight this point. He said, "In actual fact of those now out, I would shift the major guilt from them to the real enemy, Satan. He is the only real enemy. He is furious right now, intensifying his attack. I again warn all of you. Yet if I say to one who is out now, the real blame is not yours, Satan got to you, deceived you, and thus used you against Christ and the church, he would bristle up in self-righteous anger. He would say, 'Satan deceive and use me? Never! You accuse me of being a minister of Satan? Satan could never deceive me.' No, I don't falsely accuse. I don't accuse such a former minister at all. I merely remove the principal blame from him and lay it where it belongs, on Satan." Even here, Mr. Armstrong wasn't placing blame on these ministers who were put out of the church. He recognized Satan as the master architect. Without Satan, these ministers are never deceived in the first place. Do you remember The Wizard of Oz? At the end of the movie, Toto started barking at the curtain, and the wizard shouted, "Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain!" It's so easy to get angry and blame the world and the people in this world and forget that Satan is behind it all. In fact, that's just what he wants us to do. He wants to remain in the shadows. One of the greatest deceptions of Satan is convincing the world that he doesn't even exist. In fact, more people today believe that Satan doesn't exist, even if they do believe God exists. The world doesn't know what they're doing. They don't have the truth like we do. They've been blinded, and they are slaves to Satan. He is possibly the third most powerful being in existence, and his sole purpose in life right now is to destroy God's church, to destroy you, to destroy me. It is impossible for a carnal-minded human being to withstand him. Now, sure, man has free will to choose, but human willpower is a finite resource, and as history has shown, those without the Holy Spirit give in again and again and again. Despite man having good intentions in his mind, he is right, he is just, he is moral, but he is ultimately deceived. So when we witness persecution, or we are persecuted, when we witness injustice, or we are a victim of injustice, know who is behind it all. Let's turn to Ephesians 6 and verse 11. Everyone knows this passage, and it goes to prove who we are really at war with. Ephesians 6, verse 11 through 12. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Notice it doesn't say put on your bulletproof vest that you may be able to stand against your tyrannical human government. No, it's the armor of God that we need in order to stand against the wiles of the devil, the false accuser, the slanderer. Satan is cunning. He's very good at what he does. And to falsely accuse any of us for being hateful, racist, or bigoted is too easy. He's the author of this confused world, and we're playing in his sandbox. Now, continuing on in verse 12, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So if we keep things in perspective, we're not wrestling with Charlie in accounting, who dyes his hair blue and wears pink dress and his preferred pronouns are they, them. It's not the school bully for picking on us because we aren't conforming. It's not the government that wants to imprison us for our beliefs. It's not the school board that wants to indoctrinate our children with lies. It's not family members who have disowned us or ministers who we once trusted and are now preaching a different gospel. These entities or persons certainly might view us as the enemy, which by fiat makes them our enemy, but they aren't who we are in a spiritual war with. They're merely being used as pawns to do their father's bidding. And in fact, we're instructed to love and pray for our enemies who curse and hate us. We read that in Matthew 5 and verse 44. You don't need to turn there. But remember again what Christ said. We read this earlier. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Man is blind. Man is doing what he in his deceived heart believes is right based on the lies he's been sold by Satan. There's a saying, a man can't see, he can't fight. And while we might not be able to physically see our enemy, we certainly can be aware of who our real enemy is and the source for the evil in this world. So in closing, let's continue to read on in Ephesians, verse 13. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. And you can read the rest, but we are shown that we are not without the means to do battle against our spiritual foe. Not to mention, we have two of the most powerful beings in existence, along with their army of angels, to protect us. This world cannot defend itself against Satan because it hasn't been given the means to, nor does it even recognize who the real enemy is. We have been given the knowledge and understanding, so we can defend ourselves. And we know who is actually pulling the strings. It's our real enemy, our great adversary, Satan the devil.